Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Decent Christian Talk podcast. Enjoy.
All right, so we are here today with Josiah, of course, but we also have a special guest. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Hey, guys, this is Josh Balog of Jesus Freak Hideout joining Gabriel and Josiah on the Decent Christian Talk podcast. Welcome.
Yeah, and we asked Josh Balog to join us because this is a very special episode. We're talking about jars of clay. We've done episodes like this in the past where we've talked about Audio Adrenaline and the Newsboys catalog, but we needed some help with this because we know that this is one of Josh's favorite bands. And for those of you that haven't been paying attention, Josh constantly puts out these lists that are, well, sometimes they're controversial, but most of the times they're very, very accurate, or at least somewhat accurate. But
in the ballpark,
I would say in depth, I would say tedious, that he goes through thousands and thousands of songs just to throw out there to argue with someone who's
just
better.
To destroy the internet a little bit.
I know, just for a day.
I think I think the toughest one was the entire Reliant K catalog. I don't know how you did that.
That was actually a lot more songs than I was expecting between all of the EPs and things that they've done, but that was a fun one. It's fun for me to try to organize those things and try to put those in some type of order, even if they are not the order that other people would agree with.
My
problem with ranking all those songs, and even what we're ranking today, is I will rank something, and then the next day I'll be in a different mood, and my rankings will be all different just based on the mood I'm in. So do you ever just sit there, and because you're writing out hundreds of songs, do you ever come back after a few minutes and you're like, nope, scrap the whole thing and start over?
I've had to do that with a few lists. Some of the ones that I've been tinkering with over the years, like the 100 greatest albums of the 90s, I've gone back and tinkered with several times. But usually on the song ones, because you can get really into the minutiae of it, I just kind of leave it alone for the most part.
I like it.
Yeah, I really don't know how you do that, but I think there's a little insanity going on there. But anyway, be that as it may, that brings us to Jars of Clay today. Jars of Clay, you know, they are a band that's been around since the mid-90s. They actually started out, I think, around the early 90s. It's been the same quartet, if you will, Dan Hasseltine, Charlie Lowell, Stephen Mason, Matt Aldmark. They take their band name from the 2 Corinthians 4:7, but we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. It's quite interesting when you have a band that has stayed together, no lineup changes. What do you think, when you see that happen, what comes to mind? Because there's so many bands that may have been around that long, but oftentimes it's pretty rare that you don't see a lineup change.
Yeah, it's very rare. It speaks to the fact that they obviously like each other and enjoy making music, and they were on the road for a long time together. I think it also is probably why they haven't ever had an official "we're done" breakup kind of thing, even though it's been a long time since their last album. I'm still hopeful that they'll make new music. They still kind of left that open. I think they just had a common mission of wanting to make music that was kind of not just explicitly Christian for Christians and not too Christian for the mainstream market, somewhere kind of in the middle there. But you're right, very rare.
In order to do that, you have to all have the same vision, because whether or not you have different styles in music or different messages you want to put out or anything like that, in order for a band to stay cohesive, I'm sure they've had their disagreements, but at the same time, for them to be this consistent for this long with no lineup changes means, one, they probably get along, and two, they have the same goal in mind, whatever that goal may be.
Yeah, and so they ended up meeting in college, and or at least they formed in college, and they put out an album in 1994 called Frail. This album actually was is their first release. They only released about 1,000 copies or so, and it pretty much is full of songs that ended up on future records. Some on the first album, some on the second album. But that led them to performing at the GMA Spotlight Competition in Nashville in April of that year. And they won a competition, kind of a talent competition, if you will. Wikipedia very bizarrely says that they played Fade to Gray and Like a Child, complete with choreography and baby binkies in their mouth, and met with positive responses from record companies who are present. So picture that. That's, and I've never heard that before. But anyway, they won this competition. They got signed to a label as a result. And later on in 1995, October 11th, they released their debut album on... October 24th, 1995, they released their label debut, self-titled, sold over 3 million copies. Jesus Freak Out has rated it 5 stars. This record kind of goes down in infamy as one of the greatest debut albums in, not even Christian music, but music history. My question for you guys is, I remember when this album came out, and it was very much an album that had the kind of the genres at the time, like, that were popular, like Oasis and Radiohead, and there was a lot of but at the same time it was a fresh sound, and to come out having the mainstream success that this album had, what do you guys remember about when this album came out?
I would have been 14 years old and at a Christian youth camp when I first saw the video for Flood that summer prior to it coming out. And I was hooked from that point on. So I was eagerly anticipating the whole album coming out. And then it would have been the following year at a different youth camp that I heard, I of course, already had the album at this point, but heard the song Liquid over some really awesome speakers, and it just kind of cemented it as a favorite song of mine by them. So I remember being kind of like my mind blown a little bit, because I had just started moving away from more of the pop CCM stuff that my parents had kind of started me on listening to choosing my own music. And they were one of the bands that I latched onto right away just because of the acoustic rock kind of sound. So it just, my 14-year-old mind was just blown at that point, and it must have been shortly after that I really just kind of latched onto them as a favorite forever kind of thing.
I think the first memory of Jars of Clay for me and a whole bunch of people is that opening guitar riff in Flood, the acoustic sound. It's so darn catchy. It just grabs you and pulls you in, and that whole song is just incredible. I love that song so much. Yeah. And this album is thick because it has so many different songs that I realized when I was going through the entire catalog and listening that I knew two or three songs very well off of every record, but then some of the deeper cuts I really didn't remember that much. I haven't been an avid Jars of Clay fan like maybe Gabe or Josh. But this album, when I was listening to it, was front to back. I kind of remembered the whole thing, and I think this is the one I enjoyed the most, just like going down memory lane. And, of course, Flood, which is Jars of Clay 101, literally.
Yeah, and it's interesting that, you know, very early on, because of the success, they toured with mainstream bands like Matchbox 20. They even opened up for Sting once. The artist, not the wrestler. And so, like, even early on, they saw so much success. I remember, this is kind of a weird story, but I remember seeing them live for the first time, and a lot of their first live reviews were not very good, because, I don't know, maybe they were just kind of figuring out their sound live, but I always thought that they were pretty good live, at least like the energy that they had and the stage presence that they had. Maybe sound-wise, they were still trying to figure that out, but yeah.
I always think of when you hear a Christian song on a secular radio station, that was always a huge deal for me growing up, when you would hear Meant to Live, or even now, if you hear 21 Pilots or something like that, that's always just cool to be like, hey, one of the good guys made it, right? So when I remember hearing Flood on secular radio, and that just got me so hyped up, because I was like, hey, we're out there, like... We're famous.
You still hear that love song for a savior every now and then on like a commercial. It's just it's weird how this album still kind of pops up in places even today. That's the first album. Before we move on to the second album, at some point they released an EP called Drummer Boy. It's not really clear. Maybe Josh, you can help me out with this. If this came out in 1995 or 1997, I can't. The internet was not really kind to me when I was looking that up. Do you happen to remember when that came out, or?
I don't know for sure, but I do think it was before Much Afraid came out. Okay. So maybe in 95 or 96.
Okay, and that's for me. That was kind of notable because I really loved their rendition of Drummer Boy. And. And it's also notable because they have released quite a bit of Christmas music in their catalog, but we won't cover that too in depth because they have so much other main, you know, album stuff. Much Afraid came out in September 16th, 1997. Was probably very, very hard to... Probably pretty intimidating to head into the studio and record an album after the success that they had with their debut album. Jesus Freak Hideout Out gave it 3.5 stars, which I think was maybe a little bit below what I would rate it. Fade to Gray and Frail, which were on the demo that they recorded in 1994, showed up on this album. The album title came from a novel from 1955 called Hind's Feet on High Places. And there was also some mainstream success on this. There were some things that looking through and researching for this that I found out that the song Five Candles was actually originally written for the soundtrack for Liar Liar, if you guys remember that Jim Carrey movie. I did not know that.
The pen is blue, right?
Right. And then this was the first time that the band earned a Grammy Award for this album. And so for me, the first thing that I remember from this album was when, again, a lot of my memories with albums and bands is my experience with them, seeing them live. And I remember Stephen Mason playing a guitar solo with his teeth during Crazy Times, and I thought that was when that album came out in 1997. I was probably 12 or so at the time, and I thought that that was the most amazing thing that I had ever seen in my life when it happened. And I remember he did that at the Dove Awards too, and I thought that, like, man, these guys are really pushing the envelope here. And but yeah, I mean, there's a couple other songs, but that's just, I don't know why, but that's a memory from this album that I always remember, is Stephen Mason playing the guitar with his teeth on that song.
Yeah, I remember that too. I think I saw the playback of the Dove Awards after they were over or something like that, and I remember, I was just like, I thought that was the coolest thing, because, you know, I grew up exclusively on Christian music, and so I had no awareness of rock musicians and that that would have been something that anyone else would have ever done before. So my mind was just like, what is he doing? So I remember that as well. I remember immediately hearing this album and not liking it as much as the self-titled because the sound was different. They kind of plugged in a little bit and a little bit more electronic, and it took me a while to warm to it. But because I decided to really just kind of follow the band, it grew on me, and it's now one of my favorites. I own it on vinyl. It's one of the few vinyl records that I have. I have the self-titled, and I have this one on vinyl as well. So I consider it to be, I think 3.5 stars, the Jesus Freak Hideout. I don't know who rated that. That would have been somebody way back, but I think that's far too low. I would certainly give it 4.5, maybe the 5-star rating for that one.
Yeah, I think we always talk about how musicians spend their entire lives creating their first album, and then 2 years or less later, they're expected to put out a second album. And I think they did a pretty good job for a sophomore album. There's normally the sophomore slump, but yeah, definitely Crazy Times is something that is the one I remember off this album. And Overjoyed is another one that I remember, but probably not. I really enjoyed listening to it, playing it all the way through when I was preparing for this, but I don't know if I can name anything else off of this album.
I think the fact that they fleshed out the song Frail and added words to it really added something to it, obviously, that made it just, I think, a perfect song for that album. And I really like Fade to Gray, and then I like the song Hymn, just for the poetry that's kind of included in all of that. But I would say I would hold this album up there as top 20 in Christian music, as far as like just how lush it sounds and just how beautiful it sounds with the instrumentation. I don't know many other albums other than maybe Sixpence and the Richer's self-titled from I think the same year that I would put up there as far as like it just sounding beautiful, even if, you know, it's not your style of music, like just with all the orchestra and stringed instruments and stuff in it, it just sounds beautiful. So on vinyl, it sounds, you know, really, really good.
Yeah, I think out of all their albums, this album has like grown on me the best. Like it is aged very well for me. And so, yeah, I think this may end up in my top five. We'll see.
Ooh.
yeah, so that takes us to their third album called If I Left the Zoo. It came out in November 9th of 1999. Jesus Freak Hideout gave it only 3 stars. That's a little surprising. One thing I remember was Unforgettable You had some mainstream success. It was in the soundtrack of the 1999 movie called Drive Me Crazy. This album also won a Grammy Award. Unforgettable You is one of my favorite Jars of Clay songs. Of the entire catalog. I also really like Collide and One Loves Me Like You. I think they were really starting to, on this album, they were really trying to kind of expand, you know, like some of the instruments that they used. Like they used some accordion on this album. They used, I think Stephen Mason, more than anybody, was really trying to show what he could do. Him and Charlie Lowell both. Kind of showed, began to show some of their diversity. And that's kind of one thing that I kind of took from this album.
Yeah, I think from what I remember, the producer for this one was somebody they'd never worked with before. I think it was Dennis Herring was his name. He worked with The Counting Crows. And so they had a batch of songs that they brought with him, and I think he had them scrap them all and then just kind of start over. And so there's some songs that didn't get used that are kind of in the Jars of Clay canon that never really got recorded officially. But yeah, they definitely went outside their style, much more rootsy sounding, different instruments. They featured the keyboard much more than they had in the first two records. And I think, I mean, the first 4 songs specifically, I think are really strong. And after maybe track 5 or so, they experiment, and there's some different stuff there, and they're all good songs, because I don't think Jars of Clay's ever written a bad song. Maybe I'm biased, but I don't think they've written like a truly terrible song, but just ones that I like better than others. So I think it's certainly higher than a 3-star album, but I could see why people wouldn't rank it as highly as the first two. Certainly was very different from the first two. So you know, I think you kind of had to really, really be a fan that was willing to stick with them through whatever. But you kind of got a lot of them, at least for the fact that they went with 3 different styles on the first 3 records rather than just kind of milking one specific sound over and over again. I appreciate that about them.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And I specifically remember Collide off this album, because it's probably the first song that gave me the same feeling that Flood did. I don't know why, just the intro to that song, and then when the guitar comes in, like, Collide's probably one of my favorite top 5 songs from Jars of Clay. So I really enjoyed, like you said, the first half of this album, the first 4 songs, first 5, like somewhere in there, is songs that I still listen to and still enjoy. So it's, I think that in my memory, this album may be better than I think it is, because I don't really listen to the second half of this album very much. So I don't know. I really enjoyed this album, though.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I really appreciated about the album much later is the fact that I got to go and see them do the 20th anniversary concert in their studio. And so seeing it live, because I don't think I caught it live the first time when it came out, just seeing it live, perform live, just added a different level of appreciation. And of course, getting a copy of it on vinyl and having them sign it and everything and getting to talk with them a little bit, of course, adds a really good memory of this album. But, you know, it was at a time in my life when I was getting ready to graduate high school or just had graduated and was going to college. And so, it was an important record for me, just as, they're talking about if I left the zoo. You know, I think part of that's just about growing up and, you know, what will it look like if you leave your hometown and take on new things. And so it has some pretty special significance to me, regardless of whether it's like top 5 or whatever. It's still an important album for me.
All right. So that takes us to their 4th album. That's called The 11th Hour. It was released on March 5th, 2002. Jesus Freak Kaito gave it 4 stars. The album cover was actually a photograph taken by Dan Hasseltine out of a hotel window in Seattle. And one of the notable things that I saw about this album was the artwork was created jointly by the band. And they really kind of wanted to create something that they had all created together, including like the album packaging, which is really, really weird to even talk about in 2021, having a physical album packaging being so important to the band when that's kind of unheard of today. But that's something that I really appreciated about this album. There was a couple songs in here that I really, really loved. Revolution, I Need You. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. A couple of these next albums was an era for me where my genres was starting to shift a little bit. Like the genres that I listened to were starting to become a little more, more in the vein of like POD and Blindside and Project 86. So a lot of these albums coming up here, probably the next 2 or 3, I don't have a whole lot of memories like listening to when they actually came out. They've actually been albums that I've kind of had to rediscover within the last few years. But I think this album in particular really, really stands up over time, and I really enjoyed going back and listening to this one in particular.
This is one that hit me just at the perfect time. I was in Bible college at the time, and I remember just some of the really honest, open-ended questions that Dan was asking, specifically in songs like Silence. We just had some really great conversations in our dorm room about their lyrics at that point. And it really, it kind of solidified my lifelong love of honest, open-ended questions. Like, I hadn't really experienced a ton of Christian music at that point that was comfortable with asking questions that they didn't feel like they had to answer right in that moment. And so it was kind of this it was a faith building exercise for me, for sure, to see that you could have doubts and you could have emotions and questions and still know that God is there, even if it doesn't feel like it. So not necessarily just chasing the feeling of God being there, but knowing that he is there and that he can handle any question that we can throw at him. So it was kind of a perfect album for me in that I have a really high nostalgia factor for it. A lot of people think it's an album where they kind of returned to their original sound with the first album and the second album. And I think there's a little bit of growth there musically and some similarities, but it's one that I'll always have a high love for. I got to see the concert or the tour for this one, so that's another reason why it's high on my list of Jars of Clay albums. But yeah, it just hit me at just the right time. It's a band that I felt like I kind of grew up with. At the same time, they were, you know, they're just a few years older and just kind of growing up and experiencing life. So important album for me.
This is why we bring Josh in, for the excellent content. Because he just said, this is probably one of his favorite, most memorable albums. And I don't know why. I know the song I Need You, but the rest of this album completely escaped me. I have almost no memory of it. And listening to it back, preparing for this podcast, I thought, how did I miss this? Because this is more towards the sound that I like from Jars of Clay. And I think I really enjoyed the first playthrough. I mean, probably the first one that I've ever heard, because I don't remember it. Maybe I've taken too many bumps on the head in my life, which is possible. But I think that if I remembered this at the time it came out, like Josh remembered it, I think I would enjoy it a lot more. In fact, I want to go back and listen to it again, because it was one of those where I was listening and I was like, I don't know the words to any of these songs, but I'd like to like have a sit down more in depth, like while I'm not working or driving or whatever I was doing while listening to it. But I like the sound that this whole album brought.
Yeah, and I think for me, the hardest part for me was there is a, and I'll probably talk about this a little bit later, Jars of Clay is a band that I did not get to see live as much as I would have liked. And there was kind of a gap in between here too, where I didn't get to see them as much as I would have liked. But be that as it may, I would like to say that there was an album that they released in 2003, February 4th, called Furthermore. Jesus Freak Kyle gave it 4.5 stars. It was actually a greatest hits project, if you will. But what they did was they decided to not kind of do the traditional greatest hits project. They re-released a lot of their songs in acoustic versions, in live versions. And the people really enjoyed the heck out of this so much that it went gold. Which is kind of unheard of for a greatest hits album, but I thought that was cool listening back. But Who Are We and Who We Are Instead was the album that came out after that, November 4th, 2003. Jesus Freak Kyle gave it 4.5 stars. These next two albums in particular, I would say that I have listened to probably the least out of all the Jars of Clay albums. Again, a lot of that was because of what I was listening to at the time. And I think a lot of this was, and I don't know, maybe Josh, you could talk about this, but I thought, you know, this was kind of the era where Michael W. Smith and Third Day and just about everybody, the Newsboys, were putting out worship albums. And I felt like these next two albums in particular were Jars of Clay's, maybe not response, but maybe their take on it. And they did it in a way that was real for them. They did it in a way that was unique to them. And they did not make these next two albums in a formula that would have necessarily been played on K-Love, but still it was a really good contribution to that part of history within Christian music. And I think you know, one of the things that I didn't even know in this era was some of the collaborations they did with people like Ashley Cleveland and Kenny Meeks that I really enjoyed the heck out of. And we'll talk more about some of the more collaborations on the next album after this, but that was kind of my takeaways from this album. What do you say, Josh?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I've ever heard any of the guys from the bands explicitly say this, but it felt to me like it was their compromise they probably have record labels at this point. There was a period when they were independent, and I don't think this was it. I think it may have been the album before that they self-released, or maybe they just self-produced that one. But anyway, a little pressure from the record label. This is what's hot in music right now. It's worship music. That's what we want you to do. This may have been their compromise this Who We Are Instead specifically, I feel like, is their most explicitly Christian as far as lyrical content goes, mm-hmm. album that they've probably done. Like, it's just really out there. And I think that goes perfectly with the style of music that they chose to go with. And they just kind of leaned into the Americana, a little bit of bluegrass, very acoustic based type of music. I think it fits those lyrics that they were using very well. But this is one of those albums that it took me a while to really appreciate. When I first got it, it was a cool thing because it was one of my best friends at the time that's now my wife. She bought it for me and had put it in my car in the CD player already. And when I got in the car for us to go somewhere, it was already playing. So that's how I ended up first hearing this album. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of country music, but there's a lot of country and Americana influences in this album. So it took me a really long time to kind of warm to it. So other than the fact, you know, that I had that fond memory of her buying that for me and then us being able to see the tour for this that they did with Cademan's Call, which is another favorite band. It felt like a compromise, like Redemption songs specifically. But I can fully appreciate the fact that they did it on their own terms. They could have just done worship covers, but they wrote, you know, original songs here with, I think, one or two covers on Who We Are Instead. And then with the next album, you know, it's a hymns covers album, but it's not just the most often hymns that you would hear covered over and over and over again. It's some of the more obscure ones, and they kind of put their own style to it rather than just going with the worship formula. So I think there may have been some pressure from the record label. Again, I don't think I've ever heard them say that, but that's just kind of my take on it at this point in their career, because this is a point in their career where they hit a stretch where they're putting out an album, I think, from 2000, from Redemption Songs forward, there was an album every year for 5 years that came out. So they were cranking out some music.
That's a lot of albums.
It's a lot of albums. In the 2000s, they were pretty prolific. I think they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 plus furthermore 7. So like 7 albums come out in a 10-year span. So yeah, it took me a while to warm to this one, but it has become one of my favorites just because I think the lyrics are just a lot. I'm a lyrics guy, so it's, you know, one to really be able to kind of examine and lean into.
I think for all the reasons that you enjoyed it, I didn't enjoy it. This is probably near the bottom of my Jars of Clay list. And it's not because it's bad, but like you said, there was like a folksy country genre that they hit on every once in a while, and that's just not for me. And then I was also cursed with, I was 13 when this came out, so I did not often have control of the radio. So if Gabe wasn't listening to it, I wasn't listening to it. So as he stated, he didn't really listen to this one very much, probably one of his least listened to albums, but because he was bigger than me, I didn't listen to it either.
Yeah. And I think, you know, as Josh touched upon, Redemption Songs came out March 22nd, 2005. Jesus Freak Out gave it 4 stars. This is actually, you know, I'm a sucker for hymns and old like spirituals, and the way that they reimagined a lot of these songs, you know, and had some really unique collaborations with like Martin Smith, who I adore to this day, Sarah Kelly, even the Blind Boys of Alabama. I mean, this album for me was one that I really appreciated, and you know, it's a in a lot of ways like some of the stuff that Crowder has done lately, the way that they reimagined some of these songs. And this was actually the time period where I saw them live for the first time in several years, and I actually remember them playing some of these songs. God Will Lift Up Your Head in particular, that I just, to this day, I get goosebumps listening to that song. And also, during this time, they did a cover of a U2 song called I Need You, and I remember when they played that song live, and also played songs like I'll Fly Away, like this was like my reintroduction to Jars of Clay. This is when I really started to get back into them, was on this album. And so, which is really weird, because I usually do not listen to this type of genre, but I don't know, I just really appreciated the way that they approached this album, and I don't know, it just, it always has a place in my heart when there's hymns involved, I guess.
I agree with that, because I do. I was thinking the way to put the words. One of the things that I complained about earlier is maybe not knowing the lyrics to every Jars of Clay song, like maybe you guys do, but this album is easy to sing along with because everybody knows the lyrics to these songs. Deep down somewhere, they learned them when they were little. And God Will Lift Up Your Head is, I don't know if it's my favorite Jars of Clay song of all time, but it's my most listened to Jars of Clay song of all time, because it's just, it's literally an uplifting song, and it's almost like an anthem to someone that has their head down. And I don't know, a lot of times, especially lately, I'll wake up and I'll just say it's going to be a good day. And I just got out of bed. I don't know if it's going to be a good day or not. But instead of waking up and saying, I can't believe I have to go to work today or something like that, I'm just trying to say, okay, it's going to be a good day. And God Will Lift Up Your Head is kind of one of those statements that, I mean, even if you don't necessarily feel like it, God will be there. So that song jumps out to me. And it's top two or three songs for me from Jars of Clay.
Yeah, I don't have a ton of memories from this one. I own it. I've listened to it. I like to revisit a few of the songs. I think they were born to sing the song I'll Fly Away. I love that version of the song. There's quite a few of them that I enjoy. God Be Merciful to Me. God Will Lift Up Your Head. I also love Hiding Place. There's one song on here that I just don't like the take of it. It Is Well With My Soul. It just feels a little too peppy or poppy or something. Something about it that like grates on me. So that's really the only negative thing I would have on Jordan's Stormy Banks I Stand is really good. Yeah, so there's a lot of good songs. And I like to revisit it every once in a while when I just kind of feel myself needing to kind of recenter just the history of these hymns that I grew up on, and just the comfort of Jars of Clay kind of brings me back if I'm feeling anxious or something like that. So I'll revisit it from time to time, but it's probably the one, maybe aside from the Christmas album, that I listen to the least.
I feel like this is a good album to have. Everyone has or should have kind of like a relax playlist, or just like a calm playlist where you throw some songs on where you might not be in the best mood, and you listen to these, not sad songs, but songs to kind of break you out of that mood. But they're also not songs that you're going to, like, jump up and down to, I guess. But I think that this album is kind of in that vein for me, where I can it can pull me out of a bad mood, which sometimes I need.
Yeah, so that takes us to Good Monsters, which came out September 5th, 2006. Jesus Freak Out gave it 4.5 stars. Dan Hasseltine, in an interview, said that this album, was based on a lot of the experiences that he had. That was kind of part confessional, part euphoric. A lot of the experiences and conversations that he's had with like addicts and failures, and he just wanted to make an album that was about recovery and grace and mercy and freedom. This album won a Dove Award for the Best Rock Contemporary Album of the Year in 2007. I think this album for me was like Joseph Clay getting back to meat and potatoes of what they do best. And not that they didn't enjoy what they did with their last two albums, but I feel like this was more genuine for them. And like Dead Man Carry Me is like, for me, like that is the very much the Jars of Clay sound that I had missed the last few years. And this album for me was, again, like part of the rebirth of Jars of Clay for me. Within, you know, the last couple years seeing them live right before this album came out, and then this album coming out, and it was like, okay, this is the Jars of Clay that I really grew up with.
Yeah, this one for me, I always associate it with the time period when they got really active with Blood Water Mission. I'm not sure when exactly they started that. It would have been maybe a few years prior to this release, but I was associated with that, and you can kind of see it reflected in some of the songs, specifically Light Gives Heat, I think has an African children's choir in it. But there's some really good songs on here. Oh My God, I come back to that one a lot. All My Tears is a great cover of a, I think it's Ashley Cleveland song, if I'm not mistaken. So I think there's some really solid stuff on here. And I have a sneaky suspicion it might make its way into my top five later on. We'll just see.
Spoiler alert. I think that this is right in the era where almost... like the Newsboys, they put out their worship albums. Audio Adrenaline even put out, so I don't know if they put out worship albums, but they kind of like toned down their sound a little bit. And I feel like there was just a general consensus, like Gabe said, across a lot of Christian bands. Okay, we're putting out a worship album this year, and maybe we'll put out a second one. And then they all decided, okay, now that we did that, we're going to get back to our sound. And Work right off the bat in this album kind of set the tone for me. And this is when, I mean, I would have been in high school when this came out, so I guess I would start to maybe listen to lyrics more than I would in the past. And the line, I have no fear of drowning, it's the breathing that's taking all this work, like, I don't know, that just was kind of a cool thought to me. Like it's easy to just kind of like give up, but like pushing through and doing the work, like it's not always easy, but it's worth it. So I think that lyrically this album, like Dead Man, Work, a few other songs later on, I really, really enjoyed Good Monsters. I enjoyed that song as well. So I think even though at this point in my life, I was listening to probably more Demon Hunter than I was Jars of Clay, I really liked this album.
So, following this album, they put out another Christmas album called Christmas Songs, came out on October 26, 2007. Z's Freak Hideout gave it 5 stars. So, you know, this Christmas, when you want to listen to some Christmas music, you should go check this out. It's notable because this album was actually about the time that they transitioned to their own label called Grey Matters. And so, like, this is kind of a transition time for them, which would lead to an album called The Long Fall Back to Earth, which came out April 21st, 2009. Again, Jesus Freak Hideout, 5 stars. They're giving out 5 stars to Jars of Clay quite often here. This album was nominated for a Grammy, nominated for Dove Awards. This album for me, there's so many amazing memories from this album. And I remember listening to that open heading into Weapons for the first time. And it was Jars of Clay, but at the same time, it was just so much different than what they had done before in a lot of ways. And for me, this album was one of the more vulnerable albums that they had ever written. Safe to Land, for me, still, it's hard for me to listen to that song and not cry a little bit. Because I can feel, I don't know, just some of the tension in that song still today. But this album for me, I don't know, Josh, what you think, but this album for me is, for me, it seems like one of their more vulnerable albums that they've written.
Yeah, it's very personal. I always think of this as a lot of their songs are about relationships, but this one's very much about husband and wife relationships. And you can, yes, there's tension. There's some of it good, some of it bad. Safe to Land is a beautiful song. I think that captures that really well. Just the idea of being a musician that's traveling around on the road and then re-entering back into the family life and with wife and kids that you haven't seen, you know, for weeks on end because you've been out on the road. Just a very vulnerable, like you said, question, but very beautifully stated. And the music is just gorgeous. So yeah, it's a great song. And it is an album about relationships through and through. And it's another one, like I know I've said this several times already, but it's like, okay, well, they switched up the sound again, because there is some elements that make Jars of Clay that are present there, but it's very much more in the vein of an 80s synth pop kind of stuff, which they had never really delved too deeply into before. So I was like, okay, well, this is a little different. But they definitely reward you for sticking with them in their lyrics and then just in the nuances of the music that they produce, because, again, I don't think they do anything poorly. And so it's really worth digging into, taking the lyric booklet, and just kind of looking and seeing what they have to say. So I think it's just, overall, it's a beautiful album. It's got some really good bonus tracks that come with it that they released, I think, much later. And I would love to own. Actually, I do think I have this one on vinyl as well. So another good one to listen to on vinyl. Just very beautiful sounding.
I think that my most vivid memory of this album is Two Hands. It's such a cool concept, if I had two hands doing the same thing. And I don't know if I'd ever heard it worded like that before. I mean, I've heard people say one hand doesn't know what the other hand's doing. I've heard we're the body of Christ, we're supposed to work together. I've heard just about every other way you could phrase that, but it's just so simple. If I had two hands doing the same thing, like working together, glorifying God, not fighting myself, then like maybe we could make some progress, not only in ourselves, but in the church and all throughout the world. Like, why are we fighting each other? So I think just listening to that song, that one hit me different, because it's such a simple concept, but at the same time, you're like, well, why didn't I think of that? Like, why didn't I think of saying it that way? What, like, it really kind of spoke to me in that way.
That's good. That's good. So that takes us to their ninth album, I think number nine, called The Shelter. Came out October 5th, 2010. This was an album that was just completely full of collaborations. They collaborated with so many people on this album, from Toby Mac to Mac Powell to Lee Nash from Sixpence, David Crowder, Thad Cockrell, who was on Jimmy Fallon this year, showed up on this album twice, Audrey Assad, Derek Webb, Brandon Heath, Burlap to Kashmir. But yeah, this album was, I guess in a lot of ways you could probably call it a worship album. In fact, it was nominated for a worship album for Dove Awards, but at the same time, like, I feel like in a way that maybe like Redemption Songs in a way that who we are instead may have not captured what I love about Jars of Clay as much. I feel like The Shelter did. And the way that they interlapped all these collaborations to make it kind of like a community album kind of really kind of captured the idea of the whole album, which was The Shelter, which is taken from an old Irish proverb, and the chorus is, "In the shelter of each other we will live." And I think even today, when you think about just that idea, that's pretty powerful to think about. Even in a time where we've had to be socially distant, it's really important to lean into that. And this was the last time I ever saw them live was on this tour. And I actually, funny story, I got very sick that night, but I refused to, like, actually when Derek Webb, who opened for them, played, I was in the bathroom really sick, and I refused to leave. I stayed in, like, the aisleway right next to the door, and when they hit "I'll Fly Away," which I knew was going to be their last song, I left, man, this album for me, I'm not going to spoil it, but this is really special for me.
Yeah, I love the concept behind the whole thing. Like, what better way to wrap up the idea of community than to have a community of your friends come join you in making an album about just that? I mean, the song "Eyes Wide Open" that Mac Powell and Burlap Tkezra and Derek Webb all sing on, just, it's a great song. "God bruised the heels we've dug in the ground that we might move closer to love." I mean, that's just a killer line. And that stuck with me for so long, including that Irish proverb that the whole album is kind of based around. I think it's been a pretty foundational thing for me ever since I heard it on this album and just heard them talking about it. So I guess over the last 11 years, foundational just in how important community is. We need it more than ever in these times. And, we've got to be brave to offer it and to be vulnerable to accept it from people, because that's what we're all kind of craving. So I think revisiting this album may even be a good idea just for some of the ideas that are there. But "Eyes Wide Open" is definitely a song that has stuck with me, even though it's not, I wouldn't consider The Shelter for me anyway, like a top tier Jars of Clay album. I still think it's solid and very good and certainly worth listening to.
I think that this album came at a good time in my life. And I don't remember which song it was, but it may have been Shelter. But I think I heard it at church, and I don't know, I couldn't tell you if the band played it or if it was just a song that was playing in the background while people were walking around or whatever, but I just remember thinking, that's a really good song, and I found out what song it was, and I was like, oh, Jars of Clay put something out. I didn't know. So I went and I listened to this album, and Small Rebellions is one of my favorites. We Will Follow is one of my favorites. Shelter is such a cool concept. It's another thing, like the phrase "two hands doing the same thing," just in the shelter of each other. That's just such a cool way to put it. Shelters protect you. You're in there together with people. You're not alone. I was at this point probably off at college feeling alone. So I don't know. This album came to me at a good time. So I really enjoyed this.
So that takes us, unfortunately, to their last full-length album called Inland, called August 27th. And I say unfortunately because it's, to this point, their last one. August 27th, 2013, Jesus Freak Out, I gave it 4.5 stars. you know, this album for me, it's a big departure from what they did with The Shelter, where this album is not at all what I would consider like a CCM album. And in a lot of ways, the way that Long Fall Back to Earth was vulnerable, this album was also pretty vulnerable, where they just kind of, I don't know, maybe they looked back and they saw some of the their own shortcomings, and they wrote about them. And I think for me, I really appreciate that about this album. And, you know, like Age of Immature Mistakes, Reckless Forgiver, Loneliness and Alcohol, these are all songs that I still go back and listen to. It's hard to believe that this album came out almost 8 years ago, but yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that it's been that long, for sure. I don't remember what was going on in my life at the time that this came out. But I remember just really being drawn to several of the songs, and then being bugged by one of them. Age of Immature Mistakes bugged me because of the way that it seemed to speed up at a certain point. And I came to realize maybe that was kind of part of the point of the song, just talking about immature mistakes, going to be in a rush to do something. There's something about the, I think, the chorus that just kind of sped the song, where it felt like it was going too fast, and so it just kind of irritated my ears or something like that. But I think it then just kind of drew me to the idea of the song, and that maybe that was purposeful. So anyway, but Love in the Hard Times, I would consider like a top 10 Jars of Clay song for me. Just to, I think it's beautiful. And Pennsylvania, I think just kind of the swirling strings and everything just kind of returns back to kind of what you got from Blind and from Frail in the first two albums. So I thought that was a good nod back to the past. And then I just love the idea of Inland, the closing song, and that they saved it for last, just talking about, you know, keep going inland until you find people that don't know the message that you're bringing. And so if it is the last album we ever get from them, I think it is a very fitting swan song, but I really do hope that they put something else out again in the future here.
When you were talking about Age of Immature Mistakes, Steve Taylor popped into my head with his song Am I in Sync, where he purposefully plays that song out of sync, and that drives me nuts. So I understand your frustration with that song, but I don't remember much about this album. I know that listening to it for this podcast, Loneliness and Alcohol is a song that jumped out to me, and I really enjoyed that, and I'll probably have to do a deeper dive on some of the lyrics to understand it as deeply as our brilliant Josh does. But I see they also put out Inlandia, which is a remix of this, and I did not listen to that one preparing for this. How is Inlandia different than Inland?
It's remixes, kind of very electronic remixes. Okay. By several people, and it just, you know, it's, I didn't care for it. I mean, I listened to it maybe once
or twice, but I didn't know if it was like an electronic remix or if it would be just like a cover, or I didn't know much. I didn't know anything about it, because I just saw it when I was looking at this now.
Yeah, there's a couple cuts on there I like. I need to go back and listen to that.
Well, Gabe's the electronic guru here. DJ Gabe Real.
Yeah, so as Josh alluded to, Jars of Clay has never really formally made any announcement about if they're officially done. And I mean, to be fair, they've released some things here and there, some projects. They released a Christmas project in 2019. They're actually playing. They play annually. They have their own like Christmas show in Franklin in early December that they've been doing annually. Of course, they had to do it virtually last year, and they're playing at the White Owl Festival Memorial Day weekend this year. Our friends at UTR, yeah. UTR Media are doing that, putting that together in Nashville. You can check that out at whiteowlmusicfest.com. I think Josh, you're headed to that, right?
I will be there, so if anyone else wants to go and meet me in person for some reason, that I don't know why you would, but you could, because I'll be there.
Josh will be signing autographs.
Voice.
Yeah, but I, you know, just some news. I know that they recently had a flood in their studio. If you want to, yeah, I know that's kind of a tragic turn of events with their, yeah. But anyway, you want to head over to their merch on their website and then maybe buy something. I'm sure they appreciate that during this time. I'm sure they probably have some things that they need to replace. But yeah, I you know, there's a lot of rumors that they're done making music, but I hope that that's not true, and I hope one day that they make music. But with the music that we have, briefly, we're all going to give our top fives, and this is very hard. This is like picking your favorite Oreo flavor out of 10 very good Oreo flavors. It's very hard, but I will go first with my number five. Number five for me is If I Left the Zoo. I almost put Inland at number five, but I put it If I Left the Zoo.
Well, that's good because I put Inland at number five.
All right, so I cheated because I have a 5A.
This is normal.
5B. No, I couldn't decide because The Shelter had more songs that I really, really liked. But Redemption Songs, God Will Lift Up Your Head, if I had to pick just now, that song is so much in my favorite of Jars of Clay that Redemption Songs would be my number five.
Okay. So you're actually locking in a pick for number five.
I'm locking in that it could either be Redemption Songs or The Shelter.
Okay, fair enough.
But, you know.
All right, well, okay, that takes us to number four. For me, number four, like I said earlier, Much Afraid. It's an album for me that has grown on me probably the best out of all their albums over time, and it's an album that I probably enjoy even more now than I did when it came out.
And for me, my number four is going to be Good Monsters.
Nice.
Ooh. My number four is also Much Afraid. Definitely Crazy Times and the song Overjoyed are some of the iconic ones off of that album. But Gabe definitely copied me because I wrote this down first. I'm sure of it.
Okay, so for me, the next three, like, I knew that these would be in my top three, but I didn't know where they would end up. So currently today, this is what it is. Number three for me is Long Fall Back to Earth.
That is also my number three.
Oh, nice.
Long Fall Back to Earth.
Nice.
My number three is If I Left the Zoo.
Oh, interesting.
There's a good chance that my list is going to be different than your guys' list.
This is where it may get crazy. So, because number two for me is their debut self-titled Jars of Clay album.
Interesting.
And my number two, that is interesting. That's interesting. My number two is Much Afraid.
Oh, cool.
My number two is Good Monsters.
All right, so that takes us to our number one. And for me, drum roll please, number one is The Shelter for me. I'm not going to lie to you guys. I listen to this album probably at least once a month. I don't know why, but this is an album that has always resonated with me, and it just never gets old for me. I don't know why, but it's number one.
I am surprised, and that's awesome. That's cool. You know, anybody that knows me, probably new spoiler alert what my number one would be, but it's the self-titled. It's the album that I've bought most often from thrift stores and given away to other people. I own 3 copies currently on CD. I also have it on vinyl. It just has there's an attachment there that probably will never be broken. It's my favorite album of all time.
My favorite Jars of Clay album is this one that they did in the mid to late 2000s, called Essential. It is a best of album that Jars of Clay put out. I'm just kidding. My best is also Jars of Clay, the self-titled. Although, go listen to Essential, because all the songs that I've mentioned that are some of my favorites are on it. So if you're looking for just, you know, never heard Jars of Clay before and you kind of want to check them out, they do have a best of album out there, and they also have really good Christmas music. But the self-titled album, I juggled it, but it's just too iconic not to put it number one for me. It's just deep in the songs that I know every word to. Like I said when we talked about it, this is the one where I listened to it. I was like, okay, I remember this is Jars of Clay. This is what I grew up with.
All right, well, I guess we'll agree to disagree on our top two.
I mean, it's 2-1 that we're right, so. Josh and Josiah.
Well, Josh, right. Thank you so much for joining us. Do you want to give a plug to your infamous website?
Oh, sure. It's Josh. Let's see. I don't even know what it is. I think it's joshbalog.wordpress.com. You can see all the shenanigans. I've slowed down on what I've been writing just because I have less time on my hands. But, yeah, feel free to stop by and disagree with me on anything that's there.
And, of course, Josh is a contributor to Jesus Freak Hideout and has been a contributor to the Jesus Freak Hideout podcast, which is excellent, as always. And thank you so much for joining us. We could not have done this without you, because you are the resident Jars of Clay guru.
Oh, well, you're too kind. Thank you for having me. It was so much fun.
Don't forget to tip your waiters and waitresses. Thanks.